This podcast is sponsored by Reading Solutions UK, the home of Reading Plus. Aimed at Key Stage 2 and above, Reading Plus is an evidence-based adaptive online reading program that supports students by developing fluency, vocabulary, comprehension, and metacognition, the skills they need to read well and confidently. Learn more by visiting www.readingsolutionsuk.co.uk.
We know that reading for pleasure is a key skill for young people to develop. We also know that it can be a tricky one to encourage and embed. The question of how technology can help with this is a big one. Some take a negative view of tech around literacy, feeling that the use of screens rather than paper books could be detrimental. However, research is finding many benefits to using technology to improve literacy, with impressive results around the all-important skill of reading for pleasure. I'm joined today by two experts to discuss this topic. We've got Rachel Revel, who is Associate Principal at Oasis Academy Winchingham and Senior National Curriculum Lead for Oasis Community Learning for the North of England. And we've got Ian Turner, former Vice Principal and Director of English for a Multi-Academy Trust, now a reading development consultant and author of a white paper on tech and reading for pleasure. So I guess let's start with the importance of reading for pleasure. Like, we know it's such a key skill. What are young people going to gain from developing that habit of reading for pleasure at an early age? Rachel, would you like to start?
I think it offers such a fundamental gateway into the world, to be honest with you. I mean, in our Multi-Academy Trust, we work in disadvantaged communities, and we know that the whole act of reading, in terms of what it gives children, in terms of their academic abilities and pathways into the future and vocabulary acquisition, is just incredibly important. But also something that I've been really interested in lately is the neuroscience research about the fact that when you read about an experience, your brain's activated in the same sort of way as if it's a lived experience. So for me, in terms of them finding reading a pleasurable activity and something that brings them that kind of joy that I think proficient readers take for granted, that's something that for all of our children is a real gift and something we're really keen as educators to provide them with.
And Ian, anything to add to that?
Yeah, in a similar way, it's that development of empathy, I think, when you're exposed to learning, reading about other people, other cultures, other ideas, develops your empathy as a person. And alongside that is the kind of the educational benefits of that transferable metacognition, about being able to take that ability to approach a text with confidence and with stamina and with understanding, and transferring that to other parts of life. And I think the more you read, because I'm doing a master's in creative writing at the minute, and the more you read, the better as a writer you become. And I think we're living in an age now where the content creators are taking over. You know, even if you look at things like social media channels, TikTok, musicians, it's the writers of TV programs who are now the executive producers of things, and being able to, and in a real world sense, being able to go into a different world through a text to explore that, and then to synthesize that and create something from it. You know, it's something that's really valuable.
Absolutely. And so I saw the National Literacy Trust, and their latest figures were published in March 2020. And it wasn't great in terms of reading enjoyment. So it said it'd been the lowest that they'd been since 2013. And daily reading levels were also at the lowest recorded levels, with just 25% of children saying that they'd read daily in their free time in 2019. Yeah, what are, in your experience, some of the common barriers around reading, and particularly reading for pleasure for young people? Rachel?
I think ability to read is a crucial factor, because I think that, again, it's sort of what we were just talking about why reading can become a pleasurable activity. We take proficiency in it perhaps a little bit for granted. And I think when I think about the secondary sector, I think particularly that we've almost had an assumption that children will arrive, you know, proficient and able to engage and enjoy what we offer. So I think the actual ability to read is crucial, because when you're struggling to and stumbling over words and you're just focused entirely on decoding them, you can't get that greater sense of all those things that Ian, you know, just alluded to, that empathy and that reading for meaning and sort of, you know, making those links across text. They're really complex cognitive skills, and students, you know, children just cannot do that. But I also think that from a you know, on the ground sort of in schools perspective, the situation with resourcing in schools around reading. So particularly, you know, whether there are texts available for children, whether there are, for example, libraries, because over the course of, you know, the last decade, there have been huge changes in foci in education. I do think that has had a really detrimental effect on reading for pleasure, particularly at secondary school.
Yeah.
I think Rachel and I have had this discussion before, that as originally myself as a secondary practitioner, I was a literature graduate. I understood English language, but the mechanics of reading wasn't something that I was familiar with. So when you have a struggling year seven reader in front of you, I didn't fully appreciate the fact that it was most likely a fluency issue, that they were struggling with the actual visual navigation of the text, that their tracking was out of sync, that they were making excessive fixations on decoding words that they already understood the mechanics, but you just kind of thought that they're a slow reader, they're a struggling reader, without addressing the barriers that will remove that hurdle and make reading something that is pleasurable. Because I think there's a bit of a misconception still that by providing the time and the resource of a text that you are creating a culture of reading for pleasure, when that isn't necessarily the case. You don't enjoy painting because someone's giving you a paintbrush. You need to have the skills and the tools in place to make you more proficient and efficient at that. So I think some of the key barriers for young people are around, as Rachel said, access to those texts that are of high interest for their age, but appropriate for the level that they're reading at, so they don't feel patronized by reading a text that is the kind of text that they might have read when they were in kind of year two or year three, but also that the texts are a level appropriate, and that there's access to the teaching and learning that will remove the fluency barriers and the inefficiency barriers that stop them from being able to enjoy that time when they sit down with the text.
Great. Yeah. So those are some fairly kind of major barriers to overcome there, which seems a good point to talk about how tech can come in and address those. Rachel, how have you found that tech can be useful in sort of getting around those really big hurdles?
Well, I think one of the greatest things about tech, in terms of helping, exactly as Ian just said about the mechanics of reading, is that we've seen the ability to use truly adaptive testing to sort of realise exactly what the issues are with readers. Because I know, as Ian said, we discussed this the other day, as an English teacher, you know, at one time I prized myself on my wonderful library lessons where children were sat nice and quietly with books in front of them. But had you said to me, well, you know, are they improving their reading ability? Are they truly comprehending? I wouldn't really have been able to have an evidence base for what I was discussing. Therefore, I can't intervene in the way that I want to. And the minute that you start involving technology that provides bespoke support for children and gives them access on that individual level, and I do think that's also the gift of it, is that when they're using a device to aid them, it's so private that there's also, you remove any of that stigma, as Ian alluded to, of the type of text perhaps you're reading, the level of difficulty, all of that goes away. And also, in terms of from a school perspective, it's the level of data and things that you can get and how you can use that to sort of impact on other curriculum areas, for example, or on wider school strategies that you're building around reading. And so, like, I can tell you things now, like, you know, our children last half term read 32 million words. Their books would be good, not words. 32 million words and 4,000 books, but I wouldn't have been able to tell you that before. So the confidence in knowing that you are having that impact, making that difference in that drive to get to that joy of reading, I think is such a wonderful thing for educators and for children, obviously.
And so it's just so much more information that you have. Because even when you said that about the library lesson, I had that response of like, oh yeah, the nice quiet library lesson where they're all sitting and reading. But obviously that's not giving you anything in terms of data, really.
Right. And again, we see that, don't we, from the position of, you would have really enjoyed that, I would have really enjoyed that. But what about, as we say, that child that's actually finding this really challenging and potentially quite embarrassing, and all they're going to do is look to hide. So yeah, that's...
I think tech is the ally of the teacher. It's, you know, it supports quality first teaching, and in that library session where you have you know, a class where there's a range of 10 years between abilities within the same age group, it's very, very difficult to differentiate for that. And when it comes to silent reading, it's very difficult to diagnose or recognize what the issue is when it's silent and it's invisible, because you don't know what is happening in relation to the words on the page and the young person who's reading that text. So technology can support with that, as Rachel said, if it is adaptive, if it's providing actionable data back to the teachers to inform what happens in other parts of the classroom. And I think the technology and programs that provide things like a reading proficiency, which brings in those other factors besides the reading age. The reading age is a little bit arbitrary, certainly these days, because it's kind of like saying how far someone can run, but it doesn't tell you how fast they can run. So a lot of programs still look at, they assess, this is the reading age, here's the book for your age, without developing the skills that go into the reading aspect. And I think that the technology as well can hook into the mindset of young people who, if it's kind of incentivized, if it's rewards based within that program, it's giving them instant feedback as they go along. It's almost impossible in a library session to get around 30 children, hear them read, understand what's happening in terms of the fluency and the stamina and the comprehension and the vocab. But technology can support that now.
And coming back to those young people who are having a more difficult time, you know, so you talk about that possible 10-year gap, the people at the lower end of that, what particular benefits can we see for them for using tech? You know, you mentioned they're cutting out the stigma, which seems really, really important. What other ways can tech support them in developing those skills?
I say this, it's also to do with the practicalities of technology. If you have access to an online library that can be updated on almost a live basis to reflect the things that are happening in the world and the things that young people are interested in, particularly for those struggling readers, often nonfiction is a real source of interest for them. They're naturally curious to find out things about the world. But if you are kind of reliant on articles and magazines that have been in the library shelves since 1984, if you have to order those texts in when they're released and have them delivered and then categorize them and stick a sticker on them, access to an online library means it can be responsive very, very quickly to what people want to read about, and therefore it hooks them in, it's interesting for them.
Fantastic. And Rachel, how have you seen tech support those readers who need a bit more help?
I think exactly what Ian said about the correct range of text choices and text types. I do think that's incredibly important. And I think it is, as I said before, it's the gift of the ed tech, sort of the range of programs and things. But also, I think going back to what we discussed about intervention, I think, you know, Ian's right that when you get a, you know, reading test data, for example, for a school, you're getting a fact that you discover that they're behind, but then it's like, well, what do you do about that? And how do you target that and work with those children? And I think when you're using that adaptive testing that gives you the specifics of exactly what needs to happen in order for those students to make progress, I think that's how they're directly benefited, because as the teacher in that room, or the person running, say, an intervention group or anything like that, you suddenly know really the key people that you do need to make sure that you approach, spend time with, and discuss reading with. Whereas I think, as Ian said earlier on, when you've got that class of 13, you were just looking at them and checking that they're quiet. You're not improving their ability to read, which is obviously the driver. And I think the rewards element of it is really important, because obviously, as we all know, when you find things hard, the more that you get that positive reinforcement constantly, and sometimes for teenagers, you know, not in an embarrassing way either. But it's on a program and it's telling you you're doing well. And that's also something that keeps them motivated and keeps them going, which is vital.
Absolutely. And so I've read that there's some quite clever stuff tech is doing around helping even like word level comprehension, which even as a former English teacher, I don't think I completely could do in the way that the tech is doing. Do you have any examples of that you've seen? Could you explain a little bit how that works? Because it sounds, yeah, incredible.
So things like, if we're talking about vocabulary, for example, if you're working with a program that's been able to assess exactly where they're at in terms of the words that they can access, the skills behind not just recognizing the word, but having automaticity, that you can recognize the word when you're skimming or scanning very quickly, that you can recognize it when it's used in a different context, when the prefix or the suffix is slightly different, and adapt that and use that. But also to be exposed to words that you won't encounter in your day-to-day conversations and your everyday life. So words that you'll only find in writing, to be exposed to those, to be taught them, to have adaptive technology that teaches and instructs and supports you in mastering that language is really powerful. And, you know, in terms of things like fluency, just a very slight lack of understanding over the meaning of a word can slow you down incredibly. And when your fluency's slowing down, then your working memory's been absorbed by that physical act of reading rather than the kind of your higher order comprehension skills.
And Rachel, anything to add on that, on comprehension?
I think, again, with programs, I think it's really wonderful when you can show, you can externalize the process of how you do skim and scan when you read, because again, we return to the issue of being a proficient reader and taking that for granted. And I think when you can see the speed of with which that someone's actually reading, and as you say, where they stumble and where they fall, I think that's really helpful. And you just, it's one of those examples where tech is really so much more efficient, because you think back to the old days, don't you, where it's like, well, follow the page by using your finger underneath the line. And it's just such a great example of how things have moved forward in a really productive way, and that is more efficient and is more beneficial. And I remember when we were sort of looking at things around specific programs, the idea of students as well that are EAL, who perhaps aren't used to obviously reading from left to right, and the training that needs to go alongside that. And I thought, gosh, yeah, you don't necessarily think about that, because again, you come from your own perspective, don't you, and your experience of reading. So yeah, it's really useful.
That's such an interesting point. Yeah, I'd never even considered that. Great. But yes, so as we said in the introduction, like, there can be some resistance to the idea of sort of reading being taught on a screen. Is that something that you've come across, and kind of how do you counter it? Ian?
Not a massive amount of resistance. And if there is, it's generally around the same thing, which is to do with screen time. And I think certainly when there was a lot more homeschooling, a lot of learning was on screen. So there's fantastic reading programs and fantastic maths programs that are used in school and are used outside of school as well. But a lot more of the learning became through Zoom and Teams and different forums and sharing things on Google Classrooms and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of screen time involved. And I think people have occasionally a dislike of not having that physical page in your hand and turning the page and that kind of interaction with it. But an online text doesn't replace a physical one. It supplements it. And the skills that you can gain through using a smart program for reading, you can transfer those to the text that you're reading in the classroom that you're holding in your hands. And your reading is more efficient, and it's better, and it's stronger, and you're reading with greater understanding and stamina. So it's not replacing it. I think it just supplements it. But I think there's certainly some concern over screen time.
Yeah, definitely. Is that something that you've come across as well, Rachel?
I think certainly when we were having to teach online, exactly as Ian said, it was very challenging in terms of the amount of screen time that the children and adults were faced with. But in terms of reading, I think as long as you're going for the blended approach to what you're trying to use the online sort of electronic resource for, we haven't encountered resistance in people opposing to children using that kind of resource. I think the other thing as well is that as technology moves on, as educators, we have a responsibility to help children use the technology that they have responsibly. So I actually think that by putting literature in whatever form on the device, you're actually teaching them a more meaningful purpose for it than they perhaps would traditionally use. Because I know for us with online learning, that was our biggest shock, because part of Oasis has been that we've undertaken the Horizons project. So every child has got an iPad. And I know we assumed their proficiency would be far better than it actually was, because what they're using, you know, like as Ian said, they're using it for TikTok, and we were sort of obviously wanting them to use it for various programs. And we had to spend a lot of time teaching them actually about how to use the technology, which surprised us. So I think from that point of view, you're teaching them how to make it a real tool that will aid their development, aid their education, rather than just seeing it as something that's perhaps a social activity, which I think is where a lot of the worry comes from, doesn't it, outside of school, about how much time they are spending on screens. But I do think that blended approach is key. Because obviously for us in school too, as much as technology is wonderful, they still have to do written exams. So we really do need to get that blend. And I just see this as part of us helping children understand that.
Absolutely. And I think there can be that kind of worry that screen time just as a thing is bad. Obviously it depends so much on what's happening on that screen, right? So it could be 2 hours on TikTok, or it could be 2 hours of engaging the really interesting text that teaching you new words. So yeah, I think that's a really key point. And in terms of working with students, so you said sort of training them to use it in that way was one of the key points. Were there any other challenges to getting them to use the tech for reading?
The biggest challenge is ensuring iPads are charged. that would be the biggest challenge. I think it's like, to be honest, I think it's just like anything in a school. When you're implementing, say, a change or a new system, it's about you making sure that you're very clear about the protocols in place and the expectations. And I think the more that you think through the minutiae, you know, in terms of how you want it to use whatever system it is that you, or package that you're perhaps working with, I think that really is the barrier. And it's more about making sure staff are proficient in that as well, and understanding the benefits of it and how to use things effectively, and really building it that way. Because I think what we learn about children, particularly after everything that they've been through in the past sort of 2 years, is they are incredibly resilient and they are very adaptive. I think as well, when you're giving them something that makes an activity that they've perhaps found very challenging, and obviously, you know, we see adults and we see the debilitating effect it has when literacy levels are low. So you're giving them something that's actually going to make them feel so much better about themselves. They don't really, you know, object in any way to that. I don't mean they'll thank you necessarily, but they certainly won't object to it in my experience.
Yeah, 100%. I think the practical considerations are really important in terms of having the hardware, the software, charging them, having access to them, the pupils knowing what their login details are. It's really important with the staff as well, that they don't feel like it's something brand new that they have to learn, that it's not just a massive admin size for them that's going to be adding even more to the workload when it's been incredibly difficult for staff balancing. Home learning, school learning, remote learning, everything that's gone alongside that. So again, finding a program where you're going to be invested in, you're going to be trained how to use it, but also that it does the work for you. It reduces time that needs to be spent in terms of planning and marking, and it's not doing that job better than you. It's just supporting you and identifying those things and being able to move forwards a lot more quickly. And also for, I think, the impact of having access to that technology was really valuable over lockdown, because schools had to adapt very, very quickly and provide a solution. And now we can see that those solutions are being used for looked after children, for children who aren't in school on a regular basis. Whereas, you know, and often, you know, children who are at home without access to texts to read, if they've been provided with a device, if they've been provided with access to an online library, then they've got the world at their fingertips.
Absolutely. And I think, yeah, it's worth exploring the kind of impact of lockdown on reading. What did you both encounter just in terms of, yeah, how much it was happening with young people, how it was changing, and, you know, that use of tech, like you mentioned? Rachel?
Well, we really had to think on our feet, to be honest with you, because we'd worked really hard over a number of years to establish a physical library that was really well stocked. We were incredibly lucky at Wintry. We have a great librarian who's so passionate about children's literature that we'd really invested over a number of years because we felt so strongly about that reading needed to be at the heart of the curriculum in order for our children to be successful. So then when lockdown happened, suddenly we didn't have that resource. We found ourselves obviously having to look at alternatives, and that's really how we got into the notion of you know, using sort of online books and having e-libraries available and things like that. And then we were fortunate that come the September, we were one of the pilot schools for the Horizons project. So suddenly we had this piece of kit that meant that we then could utilize that. And it was really, really clear to us that if we hadn't had that electronic resource, then our children would have stopped reading, because as we've just talked about, you know, they need something that's going to guide them the same way we know that they need schooling and they need to be with us. As much as we all learned a lot and we did absolute best we could with online learning, it can't replace that interaction and need for you know, teaching staff and all the staff within education. So I think we learned, as Ian said, you know, really rapidly about the benefits. And I think what's been the greatest thing about the pandemic is you did do things because you had to and you needed to change, but it has led to long lasting change, which actually is really helping us, and particularly around the reading for pleasure agenda, because that's where your e-libraries and everything become so important, because children are just accessing those now and have become really familiar with how to use them. Whereas before, I don't think they would have necessarily known how to use those either.
Fantastic. Ian, anything to add on that one?
Yeah, it was, I remember from my daughter's experience that suddenly, you know, the school libraries were locked and you couldn't swap books. And, you know, we're fortunate that we have books at home, but it doesn't necessarily mean that every parent has the skill to read with their child and to then assess them in the same way that a teacher wouldn't know what the next steps are. I know I certainly struggled with year five maths when I had to work with that's not my strong point. I had to rely on YouTube to understand how to do half of what she was asked to do. So there's a lot of demands put on parents. So, you know, I think the online technology took away some of that pressure for them. Good reading edtech provided teachers with the ability to monitor what was happening with that pupil's reading from their own home or from the classroom, because it was kind of instantaneously there for them to have a look at. Certainly find that schools that didn't have something in place in terms of an online reading program, the pupils have returned with wider fluency gaps or comprehension gaps than before, whereas the schools that had something in place haven't had such a noticeable catch-up requirement when they've come back.
Yeah. And finally, I guess, for those schools that maybe haven't got a program in place and are looking at trying to close that gap now, if they're just starting on their kind of tech for reading journey, what advice would you give to them? Where could they start?
I think they need to undertake really thorough research, both inside and outside of school. I think asking students what their experiences are, you know, in terms of electronic reading in you know, whatever form, and finding out sort of their views is one part of it. I also think looking at your own setting is important in terms of what kinds of programs and things would work in terms of what you've got access to. And then it becomes about really thoroughly researching what's available on the market. And I think within school, and anyone obviously who works at school will know this, you find someone who's really passionate about this, because they will go away and really look into it. And then, you know, trial things in terms of which ones you think will fit for you, because I think it's really important that everybody does understand that it is about you assessing where you are on the journey with this, and what the greatest need is in your particular setting, and that's kind of the starting point that I would go from.
Fantastic. Ian, what would your advice be?
I think firstly it's understanding what your reading culture is in the school, you know, whether it's a kind of a token slogan of we love to read, or whether there is a genuine want, a desire, a love of reading with every single child. And if there's not, what is the thing that's holding them back? Because it's understanding what the problem is and the scale of the problem, and then to consider what that solution is. So rather than looking for the program that has the solution, to know what the solution is that you're looking for and then explore that, because there's a lot of options out there. But it's understanding, do you have pupils who read too quickly and then struggle to demonstrate the understanding of what they've read? Or do you have children who've got very good understanding, but their reading, the physical act of reading, is awkward and labored, and that means that they can't finish tasks and it causes them kind of no amount of anxiety? So understand what the problem is, what the ideal solution would be for you, and then budgeting. You need to be very clear on what you have available, whether this is going to be a cost that's split across 1, 2, or 3 years, how many pupils you're gonna afford to tackle with it. So yeah, understand the problem, the scale of it, and what budget tools you have at your disposal to address that.